This is the one with Dobby the House Elf.
The Year That Never Was.
Super Horny Nihilism.
Psychic Rejuvenation.
And Martha's Final Countdown.
It's called Last of the Time Lords.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Cyber, Zandun, wow!
Tennant, Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than Who back when? Who back when?
Ladies and gentlemen, and all in between and beyond, welcome to Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or DocPast.
This is episode N041, Last of the Time Lords, last of Series 3. I am joined by two of my nearest and dearest co-hosts. On my left...
Hi, Pumpkin. What's up?
And over the other side of the room there...
This is Nick. How you doing, Podcast Land?
Yeah, end of Season 3. Big step. End of Martha's run as the companion.
Gone too soon, definitely.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, she's not really blossomed, does she? But we'll get to that.
But she showed promise in this episode. Some real promise.
She did, yes. Did you also find that her exit from the show almost... like, it was the exit worthy of a better companion, in a way?
I think it's that we deserved a better doctor, like, for that companion. I think that it was the homage to the lack of chemistry. That's what that ending seemed to signal for me. It's like,
well, they are. No, I'm just going to go off with Tall, Dark, and Handsome instead.
Yeah. How good would this have been if we'd written more chemistry into it?
Yeah, they might have got it all done in the first farewell rather than having a super awkward second adjunct farewell.
Do you know what that reminded me of? Yeah. Pretty Woman. It's just like, do you guys pull heck on commission? Big mistake. You know any of that bit?
Never remember that.
Okay. Question about her exodus. She says, here, take the phone, I'll give you a call at some point, and when I do, you have to be there. Like, muy pronto. Does she have a call? Is she ever coming back? Or, sorry, she come back?
Not that we're aware of. I mean, no, she doesn't come back, but not that we see that she's called and he's turned up. Maybe it happens.
There might be audio adventures, if anything, maybe.
Doesn't she appear in the farewell tour of Tennant?
She
doesn't call him. That's just for his convenience entirely.
Well,
she's there. Is it actually her, or is it just a flashback?
No, he does the death... I'm going to look at everyone for 6 months, like wander around and just look at you knowingly. and that's how dying works, apparently. And if she's running around with Mickey Ricky shooting at something.
What?
Wow.
Really?
Have I just spoiled that for you?
Sorry?
Have I just spoiled that for you?
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
No, it's okay.
We'll get there.
I guess I look forward to it. I guess.
How about we get into a B scale?
Oh, shall we?
A year has passed since the Master took control of the Earth with his Toclophane, and poorly carved statues are littering the place.
Blessed Saint Martha has been spreading the word, making disciples of people of all creeds and nations, save Japan.
And meanwhile, Dobby, the Lamb of God, is synchronizing the rebellious efforts of Captain Jack and the Joneses aboard the helicarrier from the Avengers in a bid to save the world and our souls.
Bisco over, you are welcome.
Aren't you just...
All right then, lads. Where
God,
do you
is that
start?
What I sound like?
Yes. Do you not listen back?
I do religiously.
Religiously,
yeah.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, that's also an appropriate segue. What were you saying, Nick?
Where would you like to start? I think. I mean, not to go in chronological order, but start with the beginning of Martha Jones disembarking from what seems like a really non-clandestine boat.
Yeah, having turned into some sort of legend. Just by virtue of having had a gap year, basically. Because she spent, is it exactly 1 year?
It's 300, I mean, it's not exactly, because it would have been 365 and a quarter days, but 365 days.
But she does say 365 days, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is pointlessly neat.
Yeah.
Why?
Oh, but isn't that, should have been the tagline of this episode.
Pointlessly neat.
I think that can be applied to almost every solution to every problem that this episode poses. It's just too easy. Everything's just, oh, really?
I have a suggestion.
Oh, go for it.
She knows that she's got to come back exactly 365 days from now. That has been the countdown she's been preserving in her head all year. She's gone all the way around the world. This number is very important to her. It's crucial to her future plans.
That's true. But I would say, from a writing point of view, that number could have been different.
Yes.
Well, but why? I mean, even if that number had been different, how does she know she needs to be back exactly now?
I think the doctor said.
No, I get that that's the thing. How did he know then?
Yeah, is it said at the end of the last episode the Master is going to spend exactly 1 year building a bunch of rockets? No, none of that is made clear. Good point.
There are so many... I think almost more so than in other episodes, it really bugged me that we entered this episode of this part of the story just as something is going to happen. Like, just as he's finished all, like, enough rockets to, I guess, satisfy his massive bulging ego, or he's just now decided, I'm only now, after a whole year, going to talk to the Doctor and say, you know what the Toclafane are. Like, you've had a year. You've been torturing this guy for a year.
At the end of the last episode, and you have to remind me here, the Master had no plan other than the conquest of the planet.
Yeah, that was it, I think.
Rockets are just random. Like, that whole thing was like, here are these giant satellites. Also, it's like, all of the south of England is... I don't know how many of you podcast land are familiar with the south of England. I was born and raised there. It doesn't look like that. Even in when all the rockets... That's like some weird, arid wasteland, you know.
Weird, arid quarry in Wales.
Yeah.
Over and over and over again.
It's mostly just small towns. Loads of market towns.
Yeah. But why... I mean, there were rockets all over the place. We even got that excruciatingly annoying sentence of Martha's, where she, just by giving three little bullet points, geographical bullet points, goes, I've basically seen the entire world. When she says, I went past the nuclear reactors of enter actual location here, and the rockets oceans of this whatever, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was the Black Sea to the Bering Strait full of rockets, and she's like, 100,000 rockets. Like, that seems like too big a...
Yeah,
bigger set,
it's kind of
like,
sparse.
It's fucking massive, and
you
those rockets are really
rockets
parked. Yeah, you've got way more rockets than 100,000. Either way, when the rockets turn up, I was sat there like, why is he doing... What's this for? Because he wants to start a war. Also, why? Like... Because he, you know, eventually he goes on to say to build an empire. It's like, who are you going to fill it with?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just him.
It's just
him. He says it's the new this is the new Gallifreyan Empire, comprising a bunch of Toclafane and one dude who has, you know, a finite amount of regenerations left.
I assume as many semi-time lords as he can pump out of Dirty Lucy Saxon? Is that part of the plan?
Oh, there is that. I hadn't even considered that. Obviously, there's not... I mean, we start on a snog. Clearly, they're boning all the time. Well, not all the time. Every time. Every scene that we don't see him in.
Yeah.
And he's spreading them.
Sometimes we see him leaving scenes with her on the way to the bedroom.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Sidebar on the number of rockets. 200,000 rockets isn't going to be enough to blow up all the... You know,
all the life forms of the universe.
Not even the sort of fictionalized Doctor Who universe life forms in our galaxy.
Ah, but they're not incendiary rockets.
No, black hole rockets.
Black hole rockets.
Yeah.
The black hole generators. Which, okay, again, tangential. But he says at the end, they're full of black hole generators or some shit. We'll watch this planet burn together.
So, yeah.
Why are you overusing the burning and everything? Why is everything burning? The Daleks are burning in the time thing. Things are burning.
It's because you press a button and then all of a sudden we're in the, you know, infinite permanence of darkness and nothing.
Exactly. Not an inferno. Like, they invoke too often the idea of an inferno just to signal cataclysm and just destruction.
Well, it's so the Doctor has something badass to walk away from without looking back. Also, in the case of the Master, it's pyronic.
But still, I feel like neither of them understand how dark black holes work. I don't either, but I'm pretty sure it's not burning.
Maybe it's like the 2009 Star Trek thing, you know, where they set off a black hole in the middle of Nero's ship, and then all of a sudden, like, you still have a good 2 minutes to, quote-unquote, enjoy the ride, you know? Maybe that's what they're envisioning in this Doctor Who universe.
Yeah.
Also, either way, it's not going to happen.
Also, I thought that at the middle of most galaxies, there was a theoretical giant black hole anyway.
Yeah. Also, good point.
So, anyway, whatever. Are we done on the rockets? Have we picked apart the fucking rockets?
Okay.
I'll wait more to it, actually. Just when it's like, they stripped cars, and it's like, oh, right. because my Hyundai can make a black car. What the fuck? Like, that is not enough of an explanation. It's like, oh, yeah, they took to get a, you know, they took someone's satellite dish. This is not good enough as a, how would these Toclophane without opposable thumbs?
I'm picturing them as, I mean, they're basically like Inspector Gadget's gonads, right? Like, they twist open and, like, every conceivable tool just plops out.
Or they used human slaves, right, I guess.
Sorry?
They used human slaves.
Oh, actually, that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they did.
A Toclophane hovers behind Derek from down the pub, standing in front of a Hyundai, and says, make a rocket out of it. And Derek just complies magically.
I drew up these blueprints, and it's just like, I don't know why they're a robot, but it's just an etched sketch.
Yeah. Okay, so wait, hang on, where were we? We were talking about what's her face, Martha Jones, who's been walking the earth like Kane from Kung Fu for a year.
Yep, she's passed the cesspools of Guildford and the razor sharp rocks of Emmonweal and all that stuff.
And the boredom of Barnstable. And now she is back on UK shores, meets Tall, Dark and Handsome, who
Tom Blandford.
Yes.
And she's there because she has a like a CD-ROM and she wants to speak to one particular person.
Yes.
It's not really, right? It's not just an alibi to get aboard the ship later on. She does want to know what's inside one of the gonads, right? Because she doesn't know.
She doesn't know, but we're led to believe, you know, post facto, that this was like some Ocean's 11. Oh, it looks like the plan is failing, but actually we thought about this the entire time.
That is true. But when
only
the testicle
Brad Pitt
opens,
can get away with that shit,
dude. When the testicle opens, she is totally taken by surprise. She has no idea what's in there.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so that part of the narrative doesn't fit with her, you know, naked surprise at what the hell was going on. Also, how fortuitous that out of 7 billion Toclophane, you find the one kid that you remember.
No, that's not what happens.
No.
Oh,
I thought it was, but the Toclophane says we share all our memories.
Yeah, I have a note about that. He says, "Yeah, we share all our memories. Like it's a collective, right?"
Yeah.
So
it's like the Borg, but in little spherical testicles.
Doesn't that mean that every other Toclophane now knows what that one that they dissected has seen? Doesn't that also mean that when what's her face, Professor Doherty, Doherty, when she calls the Master, when she Skypes him, wouldn't he just go old news, Doherty? Like everyone knows this. Like literally everyone knows this already.
Now I reckon what happened is that when the future humans were put into the Toclophane, they were pre-programmed with all the human race's memories up to that point. But then after that, you can't. People would be overloaded. They wouldn't know where they were if there were 6 billion different, you know, worlds flying at them all at once. They have to be individual after that.
Interesting. So they're not like the Borg then.
I suppose not, no.
Ah, okay.
I'm sorry I said that.
No, that's fine. I was viewing them very much like the Borg. No, Nick?
No, I didn't see Borg elements. I mean, just the collective aspect. I skipped over the hive mind idea because as much as that explanation you just tended makes sense, it also doesn't make sense of... So they are able to accomplish all 6 billion worth of, you know, memory... Mm-hmm. But nothing over that. Do they have like a limit? It's like, okay, I can accomplish all of 6 billion people's memories, but that's it. No more.
From now on, I'm done. Yeah, otherwise I might just get a little bit overloaded.
Well, a lot bit overloaded. I mean, you wake up inside a ball and be like, okay, I guess I know all this stuff, rather than, how do I fly this thing? Am I up here? No, wait, I'm down there. I'm behind myself. Fuck!
But still, I don't need to know that little Timmy met a random human. Like, that's not useful.
Oh, Crete. Yeah. No, I was confused. I watched this twice because the first time around I thought, well, Crete's had the Scottish accent for 100 trillion years. Put him inside a ball and he's like, hello, Martha Jones. I'm a workaday actor from the south of England who can't get a proper on-screen role, but no.
Really sorry if that actor is tuning in right now, by the way.
Also, not makeup. That was hurtful.
Okay.
Where are we going with that?
Toclophane. Let's talk
Toclophane. For the record, yes, they are exactly what I remember them being.
I'm very, very pleased.
Oh, the reveal.
Yeah.
Yes.
I feel like they could have done more with the reveal, though. And that's not the only reveal. There's another reveal that we've talked about on Who Back When so many times. I mentioned it possibly in the last episode or two episodes ago.
Mm. Oh.
The Face of Bol reveal.
Oh, no.
And that actually happens here as well. And it's just...
That's good.
It's not good because
it's not good.
Last
it's good.
Time
I misremembered the bowl meaning as well. Yeah. I thought it was BEAU bowl, as in he was good looking.
I know, it's the place.
But last time we let RTD off because it was so incoherent and didn't make any sense. We thought, oh, okay, he gets around to deciding this 12 months from now when the jam on his whiteboard of craziness is wiped off. But no, this was all within the same storytelling unit, and he set it up and ruined it.
Why is it bad?
Because the Face of Bo remembers... He doesn't help Doctor out at all.
No. Yeah, but... Well, again, so if we go back to if we go to memory capacity, he lives forever, but does his memory?
Yeah, but okay, Dude Meister, what about two episodes ago when the last time I brought this up on the show was when, in Captain Jack's presence, the Face of Bol was name-checked. So why at the time did Captain Jack not go, hey, that was my nickname, guys, that is such a coincidence. Oh, wait a minute.
Maybe he's just in here, maybe he's just slightly out of earshot.
Nah, I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
I think it's a massive plot hole. Although Captain Jack could have been just listening to himself singing in his head while the Face of Bo is talking until someone pays him some attention.
Hmm.
I love that Captain Jack is the Face of Bo, though. I think that's very, very
nice.
I think
that's cool.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you know why I don't like it? It's because Captain Jack has to go on a 2 to 3 minute monologue at the end of the episode that stops it dead while they get it around the circuitous explanation of how he could possibly be the Face of Bo. And it just makes the end of the episode drag tremendously. And good an actor as John Barrowman is, he couldn't quite pull off all that rampant exposition.
I didn't think that. I didn't think it was circuitous because I was thinking that myself. Honestly, like, are you going to live forever? Do you age? That was a line of inquiry that I needed answering.
But we have talked about this on the show before.
Hmm.
Yeah. But also, it completely negates the fixed point in time concept, which is that he shouldn't turn into a big face and die after an arbitrary point of time. He should be...
forever.
Infinite, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, we were talking about the other thing.
Oh, the Toklaf Fin reveal.
Yes, the Toklaf Fin. There.
Are you a Toklaf fan?
I am. Well, it does wrap it up in a nice little package. But at the same time, we don't get to see Utopia. For 3 episodes, I've been waiting to actually see what Utopia is.
Hang on, but that's it. That's the point. There wasn't one.
But they did end up somewhere where they engineer themselves into these tiny balls. I did want
not,
to see
I don't
some...
Think
that's
that,
not what I thought
I
either.
No, I didn't think that either. I think that the rocket went off and the Master...
Yeah, but the Master has to have picked them up from somewhere. They have landed at some point on the map that's sending out this signal. The signal is not explained. What I thought was that the Master taking the TARDIS to the so-say point of Utopia would be what was emitting the signal.
Wait, hang on. That is what I think happened.
Hmm.
Okay.
Is that not what happened? Oh. I thought that he... I mean, because he has the possibility to... as in, he can only travel between two times... Sorry, from one time to another, to A and B. Oh, I'm phrasing this terribly. So he goes to the year gajillion bajillion and sets up this sort of buoy that sends out a signal. I mean, the whole thing, we can talk about the paradox later on as well, but this would be another one of them, like where he sets up this buoy to lure people somewhere, the people that he helped get there previously, before he had set up a buoy and so on and so forth. And then when they get there, they realize there's nothing, which I think they even say in this episode, like, oh, there was no salvation. We just got there and then we saw that the world was ending. And then, fill in the blank, I think, the Master chopped off their heads and shoved them into gonads.
Okay, very possibly, but I did at least want to see his...
What, the end
his,
of the world?
Yeah, his buoy or the Utopia. It's not what they imagined, but it's some... barren dead space at the end of the universe.
Want to see the disappointment
see,
in their
if,
faces.
Yeah, no, but I think what if it was nothing? They got there, he cut the engines, they floated there, he did his thing. You know, like, it might have been nothing.
What was the thing he said about how they regressed into childhood? Like, they turned into children? Which is why all of them sound very childlike.
Yeah, although they sound a bit childlike, but the voice is very definitely adult.
Yeah, but...
The one child they had is now... His voice is broken, apparently. But whatever.
But doesn't he say something like, oh, and possibly as a consequence of this trauma, they regressed into childhood?
They cannibalized themselves, regressing into children, but it didn't work.
Yeah, wouldn't that take some time? And also, they have their technology, the famous human technology. They turned it in on themselves. They didn't do that overnight. They didn't, and the master didn't say he was involved in that.
It's like several generations later.
Yeah, in which case, the master, what, is he just waiting around for 180 years while they sort that shit out? Because he can only go between the two time points.
Oh, God damn it.
See, what I think is, I think that RTD kept Utopia deliberately just completely off screen.
Because he doesn't know how to connect those two dots.
Yeah, and because when you start actually looking into it, it is full bullshit.
Oh. But you know what? Can you not just rub a little bit of Vaseline on the screen so that it's, you know, just a bit blurry and go, it's so cool, though. I mean, we had all of these people aboard a rocket. They went there. He decapitated them, and now the ball's taking over the
also no, that, see,
that would have been I think that's of some, you know, if we do the Vaseline thing, it was
later,
let's do that,
it was sort of it's dark and kind of cool and, you know, all that aspect, you know, but I don't know, on an aesthetic level, those balls and it just wasn't very scary. Like, were they very scary? I didn't find that. What would have been scarier if they were some, I think if they'd left them as humanoid in nature.
Is this what you mean? Like, the fact that they actually enjoyed themselves? That they, when they go like, when they're asked, why do you want to kill your own kind? And they go, oh, because it's fun. It's like, oh, well, you're not suffering at all, are you? Yeah. You're having a good time. You're not suffering. If they were in these balls, if they basically were the way that, do you remember, is it in Rise of the Cybermen or one of those two where one of the Cybermen, their emotional inhibitor or something collapses in on itself and it just suddenly remembers.
Yes.
Nice one. She just suddenly remembers, like, oh, who she is. It's her wedding day. And she just goes, oh, why am I encased in metal? If every single one of them were like that, or at the very least the one that they crack open, when Doherty cracks one open, if that thing just starts screaming, like, what is going on, you guys? Where is my body? Why am I in a gonad? That would have been awesome.
Yes.
Probably better than this.
I do agree with Nick, though, that the balls aren't scary. Even when the blades pop out, it seems more an abstract threat. I mean, you hear slicing and dicing, but it's always necessary.
Well, because the mechanics, it's like, we want to slice. They chant at some point, we're slicing something, right? When they're in space.
Yeah.
Like, but how? You're a ball. You're rotating and cutting, but dicing isn't in your, like, if I, here's some garlic, you're not going to be able to sort that out for me, are you, ball? They don't move up and down. They're just static.
Do they say slice and dice?
Oh, some shit like that.
Well, okay, even if they do, then slice and dice is it's a phrase. It's something you say.
No, well, what I'm saying is that the act isn't very menacing to me because it's so fixed.
They also have lasers.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Also, balls are easy to animate. 6 billion of them.
Yeah, definitely.
6 billion, as amazing as Derek Jacobi was, he was not building a rocket with a capacity of 6 billion.
I know.
Or was he?
Those are some fucking long noodles.
Those were the superest to noodles. Chicken teriyaki flavor.
So it must be several, I mean, so many generations later. Well, they must have got to non-utopia.
And they multiplied.
Dystopia and just, yeah, exactly. Multiplied. Inhabited an entire planet over a number of, I don't know, millennia. And over the course of that time, regressed into sort of a childlike state and then been decapitated.
Yeah. Also, you know the other thing that isn't revealed about the Toclophane?
What's that?
What happens to them? They're just left at the end of the universe. 6 billion humans.
Oh, they're undone, yeah.
And the Doctor's like, I better go and save them now. Except he isn't.
Can't save them. End of the universe,
I guess. But it's another thing that RTD just sweeps off screen. It's like, oh, great, we saved this planet worth of humans. There's an equivalent number of humans who you've left to a horrible, dark, grisly fate of terror and existential nothingness.
Super good point.
Yeah, but follow it down the rabbit hole. It's the planet that we're on at the time we're on, and that's all we care about.
Yeah?
Yeah, I suppose.
It's an unhelpful attitude, RTD. Also, I wanted to see a shot of the Master's face on Mount Rushmore. That would not have been difficult.
I know. Why would you bring it up and then not show us?
What's worse is that they had a campy statue in ill-fitting suit. Why was that the fucking...
It was probably, like, 3D printed by a bunch of Toclophane.
We are left speechless by this episode, podcast later.
I mean, the statue bit specifically, it's like, so they're trying to... The whole thing was like, okay, this is pharaohdom, you know, yeah. human slaves have done this, you know, dictatorial Saddam Hussein, you know, all the trying to evoke all of the fucking images of, you know, dictators,
despots.
Yeah, despots and dictators throughout history. That's what that was in that small scene. That's what we were supposed to do. So we had big statue, you know, we had like Saddam Hussein. We had
weapons of mass destruction.
Weapons of mass destruction and silos like Stalin, like the Soviet Union in America. We had the whole lot, and none of it came together. Like, really, I didn't feel him as a despot or a ruler. Or when we talk about the empire, there was no empire. There's just you, mate.
Yeah, and I think a huge part of that is that the solution to the problem that he poses is too neat. It's too easy. Like, all of the problems that they built up, they can't tie up all of those loose ends in one single episode. All of the solutions that they provided in this one episode, they could have filled an entire season. They could have had Martha walking the earth for several episodes. They could have had the huge plan, or please, can that be the next talking point, by the way? The master plan, the doctor's master plan aboard the helicarrier of how to finally, you know, rebel against the monster. That could have been several episodes as well, and it could have been something more elaborate, but instead, every single thing, including the actual...
It could have been like two half series. Like, there's like the Old Testament and the New Testament.
No, but everything has just ended too quickly, including the fall of the new Gallifreyan Empire. And you're talking about, you know, it's showing all of these stereotypes of a despot and his reign, but then the whole thing is just concluded by the master going, actually, yeah, I'm not going to kill myself. Here you go.
No reign. What we see is him ordering 10% of the population being murdered in the previous series. We see loads of silos and...
Fast forward to another use of modern music.
Yeah, and a bunch of people in a tenant, a house, you know, a terrace house. But we don't actually see the data, because the day-to-day aspect of what the world looks like now would have been much more like a montage, just like a thing of how do people work now, putting human slaves to work.
You know, we've had that on Doctor Who before. I mean, probably in several iterations, but at least in one case that we've covered on Who Back When, and that is, in fact, twice. Once, I know you've been on it, the Cushing remake you were
That's
on.
That's exactly what I was
so
going to
the,
say.
So the Dalek Invasion of Earth, the original Hartnell serial, and then the Peter Cushing Technicolor remake, we get to see just that. The Daleks have taken over the Earth, and they're using humans as slaves to... to dig their way down to the center of the Earth and carry out Earth Core in wicker baskets, but...
Look out for the Rachnos, by the way.
but ridiculous though that may be, we still get to see that, and as a consequence, we really feel the pain, and we understand, and we can sort of empathize with humanity. Here, no, it
Here
doesn't
just
happen.
We just see into a student bedsit.
Yeah, exactly.
Also,
a hippie commune.
Also, we get a really long montage of stock footage from all the world cities at the end saying, hey, we're back to normal. Obviously, you see this every day. And here's more of it!
I mean, that is the most hilariously hackneyed montage of stock footage. It's like, here's Piccadilly Circus, Shibuya Crossing. It's like, there are other bit like... I'm sure it wouldn't have been hard to find more nuanced stock footage in the BBC archive. It can't have been that hard.
I mean, they had already said that Japan had burned, right? So if they're going to show that crossing, then or if they're going to show any kind of stereotypical Japanese stock footage, you type in Japanese stock footage, Shutterstock immediately gives you that crossing, probably in fast forward.
Why is Piccadilly Circus such a fucking thing?
Because everyone outside of the UK thinks that that is England.
I don't understand it. There's so many other landmarks that make more sense.
No. It's the Eiffel Tower of England.
Yeah. It's just...
Bark off.
It's just cultural momentum and plagiarism. It's like, what have the last 50 films signified England by? That's how we do it.
Okay. Yep. Please can we go to the helicarrier and just talk about how it's staffed by Martha Jones's family.
But not Reggie Yates. He's still on the run.
Yes, I know.
He's the king of the underworld.
He's still in Brighton, just hanging out.
I love Reggie Yates.
So why is 90% of the staff there Martha's family? And
for the humiliation.
Okay, fair enough.
And that absolutely fits within his character set, the master. But also super dumb, right? Like, why have you got given them interconnecting jobs with each other so they yeah. can form a really, really clever...
Like easy chain.
Yeah.
Or a neat chain, to use your word again. I mean, this is exactly what I'm talking about.
It's like, here, Viet Cong, here are some shovels.
It's so they can see their dear ones suffer. It multiplies the suffering.
Well, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the right, Drew.
Okay, so how long do you think they were? How long do you think they were working on this plan? The whole like two fingers, three fingers is like, oh, today's the day. Today is the day. Yes, that Martha's mum is going to what? Shove the master's coat in the doctor's general direction? Was that the grand plan?
There's more to it, though, because the doctor has already initiated this year-long plan. And in 364 days into it, he goes, fuck this plan. We need a new plan.
Yeah.
Do you think there was a different plan? So, like, maybe Martha misunderstood him. He said something like, "Oh, all right. So wait 350 days."
And maybe she was like, "Wait four."
And then after 365 days, she still hasn't showed up, and he just goes, "Oh fuck, she's probably dead." So like, let's just grab the coat.
I think he went, "Wait 3 or 6 or 4 days." Like,
you look like a man with something on his mind, Drew.
Oh, yes. I think that this is a sub-plan from the Doctor. Ooh. This is just to make the Master hear those terrible, unbearable words, I forgive you. Because every time the Doctor has said, there's something I've got to tell you, it's that thing I've been meaning to tell you, the Master somehow has jumped in and said, no.
Yeah, what is that about?
Could the Doctor not just whisper, I forgive you?
Ah, sigh. I beat you.
You're now cloaked in my love.
Exactly. Just that happened throughout the episode.
Yeah, a number of occasions.
And the Doctor clearly wasn't going to shoot him, or at least kill him with the laser screwdriver. What was he going to do? Age him a bit? What was he going to do if the laser screwdriver actually worked?
I guess kill him, because he uses the laser screwdriver to kill other people.
But the Doctor
Except
then
it's
later
like
says,
one of the, you know, the Doctor Judge then, Dredd's gun.
He's going to turn his water into wine. Let's talk about Dr. Jesus.
Oh,
the King of Jews.
I've got him as Super Jesus in my notes.
Super Jesus?
Yeah, because he can fly and he has telekinetic powers.
So did Jesus.
Super Jesus.
Jesus had telekinetic powers and could fly.
How? Okay, so...
He also could command sharks.
I suppose if he wanted to.
That's true, people. Don't look it up.
They were going to put that in the Bible, but thought it'd be too outlandish.
Okay, so... Is any of the ridiculousness of that scene where he levitates and he telekinetically throws stuff around...
You mean where he's resurrected and ascends?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And floats around in a crucifix or like in a crucified position? Pose, there you go, that's the word.
He has more of a Messiah complex than Jesus. He doesn't even wait 3 days.
That he just goes straight for it. But is any of that taken down a peg by the fact that there is a sci-fi explanation to it in this episode?
I like that.
Because I don't really get it. Can you explain it?
The Archangel... Well, so
yeah, exactly.
Even in the name, the Archangel Network.
Oh,
I didn't even think about that.
Did that just happen?
Oh,
God. Really?
There's too much to take in on one reading. Viewing is the word.
Okay.
So explain this.
Well, no, I don't know. I can't explain it necessarily very well. But at least it came to me more because I had remembered it as if there was no explanation, that everyone just thought it and the Doctor regenerated.
That's what happened to me too.
This is going to be some bullshit. I'm going to throw my laptop at the TV. and then they explained it with the lead up was that this Archangel network is somehow tapping into everyone's subconscious and their some frequency of their, you know, our primal telekinetic, fuck knows, you know what I'm talking about here with the drums and the, you know.
Yeah.
So they were essentially using that against... What I didn't really understand is how the entire world was able to channel it into an action.
Oh, well, what happened was they essentially flooded the network with thoughts of the Doctor, and the Doctor says from his point of view, I've been able to merge with the network matrices for the year. He's ready for this signal so that when the humans flood the network with it, he can absorb the power from it.
Oh, okay.
So actually, from end to end, it adds up.
I was into it. Didn't quite get all the dots, but I thought, that's actually relatively clever. I was into that.
Supremely naff, but quite clever.
But why,
so it actually does take it down a few pegs then?
Well, it takes it down in the way that it made it some sort of sense, but it absolutely did not detract from the
super
direct
parallel.
Yeah. Like, absolutely, unashamedly, not at all nuanced parallel of, I'm Jesus, I'm going to float towards you, and forgive you.
And forgive you,
for
exactly.
You are the... You're not only the last sheep, but you are also the one that got away.
Yeah. No, there's a lot going on. It's been set up throughout this series. One of the things, now I should say at this point that I went online and I consulted a book called Time and Relative Dimensions in Faith, which was an academic book written by multiple contributors about various things over the whole 50-year span of Doctor Who, the spiritual themes, God themes, transcendent beings, all these
super
things.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a rich wealth of material to analyse there. And it mentioned all the things we talked about through this series so far, the hymns in Gridlock. Gridlock was actually nominated by like a Christian, I don't know, association or church or whatever in America for a prize.
Oh, really?
The Epiphany Prize, which they give out to TV episodes that they think promote Christianity in some way, directly or indirectly. Then they learned about RTD and they were like, oh no, we never did that. We never nominated that for that. Which is a shame. But the RTD in that episode was saying about how he wanted sort of people's religious communal inclinations to be an explanation for how people can get trapped in a place and not through their own human endeavours ascend to a higher plane. Now, the Doctor here is a sort of god of science in a way. There is a scientific explanation here, but he's not an omnipotent. Well, he is omnipotent. He's not the Judeo-Christian god. He is someone with godlike powers who teaches humans in the ways of ethics in a different way than a revealed sort of. I'm not really explaining it very well.
Yeah, by example, by providing an example, right?
See, but that sounds super New Testament-y. Isn't that what Jesus did? Like, isn't that like the point of that second half of the Bible is that he was going away giving around examples and parables and shit.
Yeah. I mean, you had things like RTD just sort of sometimes glibly throws in iconography. Like last episode, they mentioned the cruciform at the apex of the Time War. Like, I saw the Dalek Emperor grab the cruciform or something, which only makes you think of one thing.
Yeah, definitely. I don't remember that being mentioned.
Well, it's not explained.
Reminds me
it's
of
just
snooker.
Thrown in. Oh, yeah.
The Could cruciform.
RTD's a massive snooker fan, and this is a huge coincidence.
The snooker, the place where all the snooker gets played is the crucible.
Oh.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. The World Championship. So, yeah, he's definitely doing something here. But the problem is that one person's uplifting, Bible-thumping flagship episode is another person's this is why religion is stupid. So, I don't know, I guess the question
This had no, or at least from what I can understand, no anti-religious sentiment. I can't mine for any. It just seemed very pro, or not even pro, but very retelling
that
same fucking story.
It's neither pro nor con. It's certainly not trying to do anything.
Well,
it's
pro in the sense that it has no... It's not a critical exploration in either sense, right? It's the retelling, and the retelling was very pro. Like, the telling in the first place was very pro.
It's the gospel according to Martha.
Yeah. That's not a bad shout. That's a good...
Well, what it is then, perhaps, is... I think RTD...
It's reverse Jesus. Because she goes around the
reverse Jesus?
Because she goes around the world telling people about the Doctor, and then the Doctor does stuff, rather than Jesus dying, doing stuff, and then
and
all
then
the... Yeah,
walk
yeah,
around,
and then we're all
around.
Yeah,
Joseph of Arimathea fucking off to Somerset.
Yeah, he's a god in... he's a god...
Real.
He's a god entirely created by humans, rather than the other way around.
Ooh. Mm. Boy, no, no, No.
No?
Because all the stories that she is telling of him are of how he is superhuman. He is above us, right?
Yeah, he saved so many times and you don't even know.
Exactly. He's capable of performing miracles and you have to believe in him in order for him to continue performing these miracles.
Oh my days. This works from both sides because... Yes, and you, like you said, when Martha says, oh, he saved you so many times you don't even know, you need to pay homage to this person.
Yeah, exactly.
Even if you don't know he exists.
Yeah, it's cast aside your golden calf, mankind. and behold the doctor.
Well, quite.
Yeah, I mean...
Cast aside this false prophet, the master.
Yes, our lord and master, which he says.
Oh, yes, exactly.
I think RTD's position is, okay, religions as sort of established, finished concepts are bollocks. But he understands people's motivation for believing, people's instinct for believing. And so he's not against that exactly. So what we have here is sort of an alternative take on religion that doesn't fit in with the established ones we've got, but he's sympathetic with.
Or is it even is it even faith? I mean, even though obviously the execution of it is faith-based, is his aim, is it to produce something similar to faith, or is it just a unification of mankind? Because you had very much the same thing in Gridlock, didn't you?
No, I take a departure from whilst that me sort of makes sense, is that it's not as conceptual as that. It's quite clearly Christianity. It's not like a faith. Like, it's so tightly woven into that narrative, you know, into the narrative of the New Testament, that it's not like he's making a broad sweeping statement on how loads of people have developed religions and the general merits thereof and you know what faith does or doesn't do for people, etc. He's literally exploring the concept of Jesus, like, in a way that none of the other, or at least, I mean, feel free to correct me here, but none of the other, like, deity or semi-deity, like, they don't fit into this narrative in the same way. It's all Jesus.
Let's not forget human nature, which also came up in the book, because the Doc took off his, so say, divine nature, this is all from the book I read, to become a human who then sacrifices himself.
Oh, my days.
By going the other way again.
Oh, it's the Trinity.
Wait. What's the sacrifice?
It's John Smith going, I could have a life, but he has to reassume his other nature.
So the doctor sent his only begotten son.
Oh! Wait, you're talking about... Oh, the episode, Human Nature.
Yes.
Right.
All right. Whilst this is the deepest well we've discovered here...
Yeah.
Can I go... I'm going to just take us off a little bit.
Touch upon something incredibly shocking.
Well, it's slightly related, because penance, the idea of penance in this, you know, the master has just murdered 600 million people at a low estimate, at, you know, some people say half the population, you know, 3 billion, and it all gets undone, and the doctor's, you know, he's sort of torn up and he's going to keep this person. Those, that family and the family of blood, how many people did they kill? Because they got, like, the most torturous lockings up of all time.
You know why it's different in this episode though? Mark 2:7, who can forgive sins but God alone?
Well, quite. Shit.
Can't top that one. Can't top it. Oh. But towards the end, when the doctor goes, all right, well, I guess I'm going to keep you in the TARDIS. There was a split second where I was thinking, okay, well, you're going to keep him in another one of your snow globes. Like, the master is going to be punished forever. But instead, the idea is what? The idea is to sort of reform him.
He says, I now have someone to look after.
Yeah, as opposed to Martha.
I didn't even think
by the way,
that.
Martha, you're in the room.
Yeah, it's... He actually says, maybe I'd need to stop wandering. It's like, are you just going to settle down and get a cottage? Like, what?
That's exactly what he's saying.
Yeah.
We're going to move in together. I'm going to reform this guy. He's going to be a good person. And we're going to grow radishes.
And we're going to bone.
Yes, possibly. Possibly. I don't know. I hadn't got that far. But certainly radishes.
Even if the master
You can't grow radishes with someone without fucking... It's not on. It's not real. It can't happen.
So beautifully put. Can't make an omelette. You can't grow some radishes without fucking.
It all got a bit academic, and I needed to.
But even if the Master in his current incarnation is heterosexual, he has the perfect opportunity once he's been shot in the gut, nowhere near either of his two hearts, by the way. You'd need at least two bullets to kill the Master, surely. Anyway, he could just turn into Missy, who is more than willing to bone down with Capaldi in a weird, crazy way, and they could just do it till the end of time.
See, I wasn't even considering this a sexual thing. I was thinking cottage, radishes, and retirement. Like, basically, the Doctor going, I'm done. I'm not going to save the Earth, or, in fact, the universe ever again. I'm just going to settle down and take care of this person, almost as though he's my, you know, challenged cousin.
Yeah?
Yeah. And bone him.
And bone.
Okay.
Never ask me to look after your cousin.
So, okay, go for it.
Just going off the Master slightly, but still on the subject of boning.
Yeah.
Dirty Lucy Saxon.
Yes.
Dirty Lucy Saxon is a walking paradox in this episode. Everything about her is wrong. Everything.
Everything about her. I don't know about wrong. It just doesn't fit together.
It's as though they didn't really figure out what to do with her.
It's almost like they made a female character and thought, what do we do? Oh, no, we can't give her, like, a real... Like, here are complicated themes and feelings within her, but we can't, like, blur this shading. Like, she is either all good or all bad, maniacal or ditzy.
Except in this one, she's just sort of oscillating between the two.
Yeah.
But... Or the four. But in the last one... Okay, wait. Sorry. In this one, she seems as though she's completely lost it. And the scene that I'm thinking of is the one where she describes having seen the year kajillion, bajillion, like dystopia. She has seen the end of mankind and the universe at large. And she seems to just have gone completely bonkers schizoid, just like the Master did when he peered into the vortex, right?
Yeah, except that little boy didn't have to overact and wrap his lips round every word like it was a 12-inch dildo.
Oh, yum. Okay. I did not think that you were going to end that sentence there. I thought that was just going to happen in my mind, but okay. All right, so in that scene, she seems as though she's gone completely bonkers. So now, rewind a little bit to, I think, the last episode, presumably the last episode, when they're looking out the window, and the end of the last episode, they're looking out the window of the helicarrier, and all of the Toclafane are arriving, and she's, like, you can almost see the flames in her eyeballs. I mean, she's so just hung, she's Nero, just fiddling while...
They dance. She dances.
She dances, yes, you're right. I mean, she's super giddy and happy that people are going to be tormented, right? Has she at that point seen the dystopia? Is she at this point bonkers schizoid?
What I don't understand there then is that actually, because it's not a dystopia in the traditional sense of a logical progression of humanity. It's the logical progression of the universe. It's not like where will civilization and society take us. This is entropy. This is the universe. Exactly. So it's not... Logically, that shouldn't have the same effect. Like, if you said to me, this is what life's going to be like in 100 years, that'd start to freak me out. If you're like, it's a big, you know, I wouldn't freak me out in the slightest because I will never get there. It doesn't bother me, right?
There's so much about that.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, entropy doesn't bother me as a point, but the next 100 years does bother me.
I mean, we've seen the end of the universe once before with Capaldi, right? We've probably seen it several times before in Classic. We just haven't encountered it on the show yet. But we saw it with Capaldi very recently when he's with What's-Her-Face from Game of Thrones. And they view it as, if I'm not mistaken, the sort of beautiful conclusion to the life of the universe.
Well, exactly. So my point being that Lucy Saxon, you know, discovering existential nihilism at the point, you know, I guess that makes sense. But like anything that's proactive, like an anger or like anything like that, it doesn't marry. And it's not a dystopia in the like the traditional sense, because it's not, that's just, like I said, that's the logical progression of the universe, not the logic, you know, not like Demolition Man, where that's a dystopia because that's
Los Angeles 1996.
Exactly. Yeah. That's essentially logical. Those are logical conclusions of social comment and trends in society. That's for the most part what dystopia has been a vessel
Wait. You're taking this too far, dude.
Sorry.
So at the end of the last episode, she was a complete sadist and she literally wanted, what she desired seemed to be the destruction, the end of the universe. Then she goes and sees the end of the universe and now she's oscillating between super bonkers, bananas, crazy, wanting to burn the world and holy fuck, we have to we have to really save a life while we can, because we only have a bajillion years to do so, right? And therefore she shoots him, misses his two hearts, as you pointed out.
The thing that I don't know that I agree with you there is that the savagery of seeing of ordering 600 million people die in that first instance, yeah, and dancing. How do you climb down from that and then be like, you know, that I feel like once you've passed the 10 million mark, you're done. Your soul is to the fucking ages. You're gone.
Or was she also under the influence of the Archangel, or what's it called, network? And as a consequence of everyone praying for the Doctor to reascend, she's liberated from, you know, this devilry, and all of a sudden free to
chant Doctor along with everybody else.
Exactly. Oh, and exact revenge, okay, on her stolen individualism.
That brings up more questions. Why does he need to enslave humanity when the Archangel network seems to be doing a particularly fucking great job of the Aldous Huxley version of enslaving rather than the 1980 floor version? You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh, I think people probably got rid of their phones, didn't they? Wasn't it working through the phones?
Wow. Okay. Yes. That's so true.
But like, why isn't he popular?
Yeah.
Well, he sort of switched gears, didn't
but
he?
Why did he murder anyway? He didn't need to. Actually, it would have been a much more efficient empire, like all empires have been, if you're able to win hearts and minds and then use those people to be the people that build your empire.
But he doesn't want to do that. Now. And he also wants to punish the Doctor by destroying what he loves, namely humanity. I mean, they say in this episode that he sort of switched gears, and rather than use the Archangel network to convince people to vote for him and to trust him, He used the network to spread fear and a sort of fear of disobedience. So everyone is, they have no choice but to be his slaves.
Mm.
And possibly Sexy Lucy Saxon is one of those people.
I'd be a very different dictator. That's all I'm saying. I think I'd be a much better, more efficient dictator. Oh,
we all would.
This is how it starts, isn't it? You say to us two, I'd be the best dictator. What do you think, podcast land? Spread the word. The other inconsistency about Dirty Lucy Saxon in this episode is, at the beginning, she seems to have marks on her face, like she's in an abusive relationship with the Master.
Oh,
halfway
really?
Through the episode, those disappear. At the end, they're back again.
Oh, I missed that.
I think, if I am not incorrect in spotting that, if that's not a quirk of my computer screen and its contrast ratio or whatever, that was probably something maybe they were going to work in, like that was how the Master was losing her and why she shot him in the end, and that would have actually given her character something to do.
Too dark for the kids.
I can think of one.
That's way too dark for the kids. I absolutely see that would probably what happened, and then someone said, this is like the BBC, we're going to have to stick a fucking helpline at the end of this video. At the end of this episode, let's just get
just
rid.
Undo that makeup,
please.
Now
it's not EastEnders, let's just get rid.
I did not notice that, but I think that there is one other thing that they plopped into this episode that gives her a very down-to-earth motivation, and that is the him wanting a threesome with the chick who gives him a massage. Because there's a super-duper... You know when he gets a massage?
No.
I do not remember this bit.
Wait, what?
I watched it twice. When was this?
Did you just zone out and make your own episode?
I'm
and then
the
plumber came in.
So I was sitting here, I was watching the TV, and then my trousers were off, and then seriously.
I ordered a pizza with extra sausage.
why does that Captain Jack? Actually, why, of course.
I swear to God, this was not a wank fantasy. There's definitely a scene in this episode, in the very beginning, where the Master goes, oh, it's time for my massage. Who's it going to be? Oh, today it's going to be you. And he points out, like, one of the maybe three people aboard the, you know, the main command center who isn't related to Martha. And he even says something like, oh, maybe she could join us. Like, he genuinely alludes to a threesome.
Maybe this was last week. I do not remember.
Again, if I was...
Super quick cut to her face. If I'm right, then I will pop a soundbite. If not, then I apologize and I'm thinking of something else.
Time for my massage. Who shall I have today?
Tanya.
Come on, sweetheart.
Lucy, have you met Tanya?
She's gorgeous.
You two should get to know each other. That might be fun.
There's a super quick cut to her, as far as I recall, where she looks heartbroken. She's like, oh, fuck, but I love you. Like, why are you suggesting that... Like, why are you looking at other women? And possibly her shooting him at the end of the episode is not so much, like, revenge for mankind's sake, but revenge for, like, just the destruction of her marriage.
Yeah,
if anything. Psyche. But
I would, a woman scorned.
Again, I would be a much more efficient philanderer because I wouldn't pick one of the people that are keeping me in the fucking sky to give me a massage. I'd be like, hey, you helmsman, get up here. No, you're not doing anything.
This is like
anything.
one of the foxy ladies he just keeps around. Like, in his command center. Wait. Hang on. That's a super good point that you just raised. Who the shit is piloting this ship?
It's Martha's dad. He's on janitorial duty.
Who's almost literally like shoveling coal into a furnace. Like, who's keeping them afloat?
Also, BBC, why did you pick the indentured slave black family?
Only black people.
Why was that the thing?
All of the gods are, by the way, bald / shaved white men, as far as I saw. And
oh, well, I obviously object to that.
Also,
the soldiers are basically skinheads.
If we move past all of that, right at the end, with the bullshit of it's all going back in time and paradox machine, etc., we'll blow past that.
Doctor, it's Superman in that scenario.
Yes, we'll blow past all of it.
Super Jesus.
It's like, oh, the wind is going back, and that means time is going back. Yeah, oh, my hair's ruffled.
My hair's ruffled.
You broke him. You broke him.
No, but what's worse is that it's like, oh, well, we were in the eye of the storm, so we can remember everything, but no one else does.
Yeah.
Apart from all of these guards. They were guards. And yeah. Captain Jack says,
they were all there. And at least two masseuses, guys. I swear to God, I didn't dream this.
What did they do with them?
Oh, they are fucked up. Like, they are completely effed up right now. From this point on, they will never go to work. They will never pay taxes.
Yeah, so these people... But the thing is that they, when you really, really think about it, they're like high-up Nazis. Do you mean? They're like Nuremberg-style... I was thinking of that.
There is the guard that the Doctor even says, like, oh, cuff him.
And you're like, hey, didn't this guard also help this guy murder?
Cuff yourself while you're at it.
Yeah. And maybe stop Lucy Saxon, who's just killed one half of my remaining race. Maybe... Keep an eye on her, somebody?
No, fuck that part. I mean, yes, she's just killed one person and that's heinous of its own volition. But she also, whatever the like moral epiphany she's just come to, also aided and abetted the murder, whether it actually stuck or not, of hundreds of millions of people. I don't care how contrite you are. I literally could give a fucking shit.
Oh yeah, I'm not about the morality, and that's the reason why she's set free. I'm about the procedural. Well, we should not just let her get on with her life to find that signet ring in the pyre or whatever, because that's got to be her hand, right?
Yeah, I assume so. Yeah,
exactly. Which is just another bullshit piece of not thinking it through.
So am I right in, let's use that as a segue, am I right in assuming that that's sort of like the Fob Watch? So in some way his entity is in,
I mean, we'll get to
contained
it. We'll get to
ring.
It when that master turns up again. But
how far away is that?
That's the end of Tenants.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The end of time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when the Time Lords turn up. Okay.
Well, how about Captain Jack? I know we talked about the face of Bo. But there are two things I want to talk about.
Fucking
Captain
nothing
Jack.
In this episode.
I don't know. He was caked in shit for a long time. Like, that is actually one of my notes. Why is Captain Jack caked in shit?
What did he say he was eating again?
Cold mashed Swede.
What a weird, like, that is not ad infinitum. Basically, since Dickens, it's been gruel or bread and water as the staple of you're a fucked up prisoner, we're giving you nothing to eat.
Yeah.
What a weird dish. Like, what a... Oh, all right. We've got all this Swede, which we know you hate.
up in the air, by the way? Like, wait, how... Do they ever stop for Swede? Is that what they do? Like, they just...
They're over Sweden right now. No, I think what it is RTD went down his local Tesco's. He's like, what's the cheapest thing I can find? Ah, Swede. That's very cheap.
Yeah, fair point.
There's your rationale.
Did you also think that it was very, very easy? Like, it was surprisingly easy for him to just... tear the chains from out of the wall.
Yes.
Crazy, is he? Because he's not super strong. He's just immortal.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I thought was even crazier was that they then tied him up again in exactly the same way.
And they probably have been doing for a year. I mean,
these are our only two pillars and two manacles.
Also,
what are we going to do?
Why are you feeding him with all this delicious, delicious Swede?
Clearly it's giving him super strength.
Yeah.
I mean, and like he doesn't need it because he's immortal.
Yeah, you're right.
For goodness sake. Next Jack inconsistency. Last week, the Doctor says, nobody touch anything in this paradox machine because I don't know what's wrong. And if we touch anything wrong, we will blow up the entire solar system.
I'm going to touch it with my AK-47. Why didn't they just do that when they first discovered the paradox machine?
Because I think what the Doctor said
up,
first
that's
time...
why I don't... What?
Yeah, what the Doctor said first time around was correct, but John Barrowman looks really cool shooting a machine gun at the TARDIS.
No, wait, what? when they, I mean, yes, he does.
Sorry,
he's
I
doing
gave
his,
the RCD explanation.
He's doing his Snake Plissken again, just like he did in Bad Wolf. But what was the reaction when they first saw the TARDIS?
Oh my
Wasn't
god!
Wasn't it just like, oh, don't touch anything. Yeah. If you touch anything, you might like collapse the universe or something. Yeah, it was
blow up the solar system.
Oh, okay, fine. Yeah,
that's enough.
Yeah, that is a good reason not to then just go in and Snake Biscuit or whatever you were talking about.
Snake Biscuit. What did you just say?
Snake Biscuit.
Can we please make a YouTube video of Snake Biscuit?
You know what I meant. So yeah, Jack isn't well served. Nobody is really well served. I mean, the Master has some good lines and some good moments.
Well, Martha is the protagonist here for the most part, and is fucking awful. Like,
yeah.
Really badly written.
Oh, written, yeah.
Really awfully acted. There was nothing about it.
I don't think that it was awfully acted, and I don't necessarily think that it was... Well, okay, yes, it was badly written in the sense that there wasn't much dimension to her. There weren't many levels on which she could operate. There was just that one level of the gospel, and that was it.
No, I thought there was one moment where Professor Doherty says, you don't look like the sort of person who can kill. And Martha gives her a look, which to me basically said, oh, yes, she could.
Oh,
I was
really
impressed by that look. It was badass.
Yeah, old lady, you can catch a fade. I don't know.
I still don't get the Doherty subplot.
It warranted nothing. It gave nothing.
Surely, Martha could just have given herself up if all she wanted to do was get aboard the ship. She could just have given herself up and she would have been taken aboard the ship to be killed in front of the Doctor anyway. Basta.
Well, the second string of that plot is the gun.
The gun is just the alibi in order to get her aboard the ship. I think the second string is the let's see what's inside a silver gonad.
No, I think that the gun is also a lure to the Master to say there's more to it, you know, and it gives him the extra reason to gloat. Like, look how close you were to this stupid, like, you know, weapon.
Fine, but we do also get something like 5 minutes of pop this CD-ROM in your computer. Apparently, Doherty, like, her only value seems to be that she has a working CD-ROM drive. Because actually capturing Toclophane, all you need is a little bit of electricity. Like, any electrician on the planet could do this, apparently.
I think it's a fair whack of electricity, but...
Sure. Okay. Yeah. Well, as in, it's an exact amount of electricity, an exact potency or whatever, but...
Just electricity is really potent.
Yeah. It's not like rubbing a balloon... It's not like rubbing a balloon against a wall, jam it on the Toclophane, and it... plummets to the ground.
Sure, yeah, you need a lot of it. That's the only thing. But, like...
No, isn't... So, the Doherty's a professor?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So I guess it's the research aspect.
What research? She asked a couple of questions and Martha fed her all of the answers, including the stuff that she didn't even know enough to ask about.
That's her name. Maybe she said there was data on the disc.
I think Doherty was only brought in order to... Like, she's only there to bring her on the ship. I think Martha even says as much.
Yeah. I mean, that is her function. But
so why have the whole, let's capture a Toclophane? You have had a fucking year, Martha. Like, a year.
I mean, there is the other aspect it does help us with is it's some semblance of a committed resistance force. It's like, so Doherty and Tom are supposed to be, you know, some arm of this. And at some point, Martha says, oh, the resistance knew about Doherty's kid.
She's a double agent. It's exciting.
Yeah, double agents
are
always.
But it's
exciting.
A subplot that leads nowhere.
True, it is pointless, but it does yield some good moments of television. I mean,
yeah, okay,
RCD
sure.
In this episode is so much style and flash and cool over actual substance and logic.
Oh, and then this
is not the most egregious example.
And the other thing is that the resistance is the distribution network of the message. So whilst Martha is walking round and telling people,
yeah,
like when before she gets to that terrace house, they know of her and that she can kill the, you know, so the resistance have foreshadowed her, and then once she's gone, continue to tell the story. Like, that's sort of important, but not well executed.
Okay, another question about what she talks about, just to follow on from that. How much did the Doctor actually explain to her? Because as I recall, he says like maybe 5 seconds worth of English into her ear.
Which we get over and over again.
Yeah.
4 times in the first 20 minutes.
There you go.
The exact same shot.
And somehow that comprises, wait, 365 days, spend this time telling everyone to synchronize their efforts. At some point in approximately a year's time, there will be a bunch of rockets. There's going to be a countdown. When this countdown comes, think about my name. Here are some arguments. Here are some cue cards.
She inferred all that from, use the countdown.
She inferred all of that from, rhubarb, rhubarb, rhubarb. Rhubarb, rhubarb. I'm sorry, that's an old English thing.
That's what he said.
And think my name?
No, just use the countdown.
That's not enough. It is not enough.
Of course it's not.
Use the countdown and my unending ego.
Yeah, put it together, you'll figure it out. Also, they reference countdown in this episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they do.
And there's a countdown from 181.
Did it, did it, diddly did, bong.
And RTD puts his own voice in the master saying, I could never resist the countdown.
Yeah.
He can't. It's driving me crazy. Do you know what we've missed?
Dobby?
Oh my goodness. Yes, go with that.
I'm looking at my notes, and I only have a few things that I've written down that we haven't even touched upon.
So the master suspends his regeneration. What does that mean?
I think it's basically like it turns out Gallifreyan regeneration is just like the portrait of it's Dorian Gray. It's the picture.
It's the CSS. Yeah. Yes.
So by tearing really the portraits, the style sheet is scrambled. Yeah. Now it's just
code.
900 years of code.
Why is
that's
he
not an accessible analogy?
why is he?
Whatever, it's like 4 parsecs to the nearest star, you know, that sort of thing.
So why is he suddenly tiny?
Oh, and why does he suddenly have a tiny little tailored shirt?
I was thinking that as well. Did they give him a new outfit?
Okay.
Where did this outfit come from?
Yes, because he didn't have the tailored shirt initially, did he?
No.
He didn't come out with a tailored shirt. So yes, they tailored him to his shirt.
He must be super naked.
I think after a little while, the master's like, okay, this is weird. Let's go.
Can we swing by the children's section of an
M&S? Let's go Savoy's, yeah. There's some really big teddy bears and Hanleys. Let's just get some of those others. But secondly, old people get small.
But not that small.
Not exactly not
well,
that
yeah,
small.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, if you think about the old people that are like 70, 80,
years
small,
and people will turn.
If you times that by 10, they just get even small. That's how it works. They just compound in upon themselves.
No, what happens is their spines begin to crumble and their vertebrae close up, but they don't disappear.
Well, you've not seen a 900-year-old OAP. Just take it to its logical conclusion, mate.
No, logic does not enter into that conclusion at all, dude.
He just crushes in upon himself, that's all.
I like the fact that his eyes stay the same size, because people's eyes stay the same size from birth.
Mm. Oh.
Yeah. Fun fact. So that bit they got right, nothing else.
Interesting.
Oh.
He seemed more mobile.
Yes. No arthritis.
He's like a little Yoda.
Yeah. Those joints were smooth. In fact, it was very smooth all over, old Dobby Doctor.
Yeah.
There was very little sort of texture there.
On a TV budget, I still think that they did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of parts of this episode where I genuinely felt, oh, yeah, they're cutting corners, but... No, I think Dobby was well done. I just think Dobby had no pulse in this, like no place in this.
Yeah, it was a confusing message to send to Martha as well. He was just saying, look, I've been a bastard to the Doctor, which I did like the fact that she took something else completely different.
Yeah,
from
that was a very nice scene, actually.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, wow, I've now punished you. And she's super pleased that the Doctor's alive, knowing somewhere deep down inside that, oh, no, he's going to get out of this. But... Probably because in her mind she's thinking, well, I've already told the entire world somehow, because it only takes a year to tell the entire world to say the Doctor's name. exactly at this point. Does everyone know that is a fucking countdown, by the way? How does everyone know now's the time to say Doctor?
Yes.
Oh, actually, because doesn't he actually broadcast it? He broadcasts, like, sparingly. He broadcasts to Martha, and does he actually broadcast the countdown?
Possibly, but Martha says earlier in the episode no one watches TV anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
Although Captain it takes Jack a fucking has a TV while he's manacled to watch all the drawings.
Yeah. But, like, it takes a professor in this one as well. Doherty, it's only because she's, like, a technological whiz that she's able to tune in to TV. Whom is he even broadcasting to? It's, like, it's only the Dohertys of the world that he thinks he's going to reach. Anyway. Okay.
Another point.
Go for it.
What would the Doctor do?
Oh, yeah. Sacrifice himself.
Yeah, because that's what Jesus would do.
Yeah.
Also... what does he say? What does he say to the Master when he is ascendant?
I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry. Except he suddenly says it with so much less gravitas. Yeah. Even though he is power Jesus, he is just he's just saying it like it's whatever. DM biscuits.
Snake biscuits.
Snake biscuits. We are having an evening next week or sometime when you're free to watch Escape from New York, dude.
Okay, right.
My very last note is that, what's his name? Hunk number one. Tall, dark and handsome.
Tom Milligan.
He just straight up kills the Toclophane. Like, just shoots it in its face.
Oh, yeah.
What a waste. Like... you can question this thing. You can maybe find out more from dissecting it than you will after you've shot it.
Absolutely.
It just seemed very dumb. Anyway, that's the very last note I've got.
I mean,
He's
only a resistance member because circumstances thrown him into the role, isn't it? I suppose that's why anyone is, but... yeah, okay. No, yeah, I can't let him
Charles
off.
Charles de Gaulle wasn't just like, you know what, I think I've got a penchant for this whole resistance thing.
I hope a war comes around to utilise my special talent.
Otherwise, this LinkedIn endorsement will be useless.
No, Churchill, I will not friend you.
Reviews. Shot not first.
Shot not second. Wait, shot not first, I mean.
Does that mean I go first?
Yeah.
Go for it. Well... like Nick said, there is severe moral inconsistency throughout this episode, as there has been throughout this series. The Doctor's falling over himself to save a race of hybrid Dalek humans from genocide, and they'd only just come into existence a few episodes ago. Now he presumably lets all the last humans in the universe die a miserable death at Utopia, which we never get to see. Also, as we discussed last week, there were a few pre-Toclophane hanging around with the Master when he became PM.
Yeah, which made no sense whatsoever.
And they should still be there if they've only gone back a year and a day. What happened to them?
Good point! Yeah, you're right!
That is just one of 6 billion plot holes. Paradoxes. This episode is epic and ambitious, but it is scattershot and bizarre and not up to the task. I mean, the scope of Universal War, the CGI is good. I mean, the rockets stretching off across the whole of southern England on a TV budget. That's amazing. They threw everything at this one. And the low-level psychic explanation for the Doctor's resurrection, as Nick said, better than I remembered. But still, naff. There were some good lines. There are a few awful lines. RTD's visual flair detracts from the logic of his storytelling. This episode is both quite good and yet utterly horrendous, and so it's really difficult to give it a score. So I'm not going to go with the one in my phone because it's way off.
You better give it a score. That's the whole fucking point.
I'm going to have to give it 2.5 because that's right in the middle, and I'm just baffled by it.
Okay. All right.
Did you want to go?
I'm going to make it super short.
I'm going to make mine super short as well.
Okay. Well,
I guess you're getting that.
I'm going to do this. also baffled by many points, ups and downs. I think that they've basically pitched the pacing again wrong over the two bits. They spent so much time setting this up in the first half, the first episode.
You mean the second third, but go on.
The second third, whatever. The first half that they had to cram in all the epicness into this. Yeah, and it lost so much. Like, we didn't really understand what war, who they were waging against, what this empire looks like, Gallifrey, blah, blah, blah. One thing that we didn't talk about in our reviews, in our episode, was the scene in which the Master dies, because actually that bumps things up a whole lot for me.
What, the Star Wars episode 2? What is it? Episode 2? Episode 3? Ending? It's like, oh, let's burn him on a pyre?
Oh, not that. Yeah. Not that now the, master the bit before the actual the dying in the master dying in the doctor's arms. I actually thought Tennant did a super fucking good job. I was pretty captivated by his you know, his anguish and pain, and in it, watching it twice today, that scene, it really holds up, man. He cradles the master as if he really lost something. That was super well acted. And, you know, the conflict of emotions, that what I said earlier in the episode about why he doesn't, you know, why isn't there more penance for the master, when it's because he's conflicted by his own, you know, his own place in the universe. I didn't understand the point of so much of what the master was getting up to. I didn't necessarily understand the long wind. It was not the world's greatest ending to a series, but then it wasn't the world's greatest series. So what are you going to do with that mediocrity? All that clubbing together to make a two flat.
Okay.
All right. Well,
bring us home. Last review of this series.
Oh my goodness. I had higher hopes for this episode because I did remember what the Toclafane were, and I thought that there was going to be more, you know, just, I thought it was going to be more dramatic than it really was. I completely forgotten about the Martha walks the earth bit, and it was awesome that she did that, but so why not linger on that a little bit longer? Something that I really missed was the post-apocalyptic elements of like, I guess a year from now, well, a year from 2008, whenever this was aired. I really wanted to see what is life like, you know, what are people up to. I want to see people actually building rockets. That would have been awesome. Yeah. Didn't get to see that. Wow. Thanks, guys. Very little made sense in this episode. But okay, fuck it. No, we've already talked about this ad nauseum. I will say that my main beef with this is that it's just too easy to win. It seemed as though if you're going to build everything up to the point where we all of a sudden start a year after part two of this triple, then you need almost at least as much time, as in at least two episodes, to get back down again, to land. And they just try to squeeze everything into 20 minutes so that they could then have another 20 minutes of, all right, so we need to ham-fist a goodbye for Martha, we need to do this for that, we need to do this for that, instead of just, like, let mankind actually conquer. Don't just make it so easy. Don't make the whole plan about grabbing someone's fucking coat. You know? It's just dumb. Don't get the master to just give up.
Oh, you mean when the doctor says, I know you.
Yeah.
You're not gonna
kill yourself. And he goes, yeah, I guess you're right. Done. I guess that's the fall of the Master's Empire. And that's a huge disappointment for me. I want him to fight to keep his empire. Screw this episode. I think it's a bit of a disappointment. It's a real letdown after two fairly powerful episodes. And as a consequence, I'm giving this a 2.2. Segueing and so slip-sliding into the companion farewell. This was Martha Jones' last episode. We've already said very possibly this is not going to be her last one. Maybe she will reappear at some point. The doc has her number. Although, wait, did she give the doctor her phone? How's he going to call her? What the fuck happened there?
I thought that. Like,
yeah, so at some point she might return. Maybe there's going to be an audio adventure. We have no idea. Either way, for what it's worth, I think she got a very nice goodbye. But I am so glad that she came back into the TARDIS just to say, actually, just to clarify, I am out of here. I am out of here. Rather than creep back into the TARDIS, which I almost thought there for a second. Like, go back into the TARDIS and go like, oh, actually, no, I changed my mind. I can't leave you. I love you.
Maybe they filmed two alternate endings and the second goodbye was actually let's give it one more year in the other one. But
one more,
like,
trip?
I can't stand another year of waiting for you to develop a character again that is sympathetic in any way.
And the doctor thanking her it feels less like a thank you for your time on the show than a thank you for finally taking the initiative and stepping out of the TARDIS.
You know, yeah. Sorry, this is one thing I forgot to say earlier, which I almost brought up last week, but is more in place this week, is that Martha spends a year going around proselytizing on
which
behalf
we don't get
of
to
the
see.
Doctor, which we don't get to see. But even last episode, he was still being a dick to her.
Oh, yes.
And saying, it's not important, you don't need to know, you're not important enough to know. He's been a dick to her throughout, constantly.
Yeah.
And yet she goes around
the
world.
He doesn't contradict her when she says, I've spent a year feeling like I'm second best. He doesn't go like, oh, no, I mean, you're all equal, I love you all, you're great.
Yeah.
Bigamy, yay. You know, there's none of that. You're right. He's a total dick.
See, I quite liked Martha. I think just because I have an affection for the underdog. She had the most thankless task to follow Rose and to put up with the Doctor being a completely ambivalent character for a year. Like, he was quite impossible to like for large parts of this year. How is a companion supposed to put up with that, especially when she's not given
much agency?
Well,
do you mean impossible to like, what, for, wait, for whom? Impossible to like for whom?
For the viewer. What? The Doctor's being a constant bellend.
Yeah, but have you not enjoyed his company? Well, even Martha has enjoyed his company to the degree where she fell in love with him.
Which is completely unrealistic, is the point. I mean, look back over the stats. Look at the stats page on Who Met When. And you will see that this series, like Nick said, was not a good series.
Absolutely correct. This was not a good series compared to other series, but it's still, you know, still the Doctor. He's still good.
Well, in a way, I think it's sort of courageous for RTD to go down this road of making the Doctor unlikable, actually putting him through some emotional turmoil that he can't keep from the surface of his character and his likability. I sort of respect that, but at the same time, I needed a bit more.
What does this say about Martha, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, this is a tale as old as time. Jerky guy, doting girlfriend, like, that's not like a new thing that RTD is doing there. He's doing a like aloof, unapproachable, you know, unattainable man and woman that wants to please it. You know, it's a trope that exists in loads of different forms of popular culture. Okay. He's just doing it again.
But I mean,
it's not that brave, is what I'm saying.
Well, it's brave in the sense that the jerky character, his name is on the show. You know, he's the reason people tune in, and to make him like this for a whole year.
I think he's capitalizing on probably a lot of other stuff happening that same year, or is the anti-hero aspect. You know, there's loads of things that are propping up at that point where, like, you know, jerky characters doing quite well, you know.
Oh, like Dark Knight?
Probably a bit earlier than this. I think Dark Knight was later than this, but, you know.
Okay.
Just to point out comic book versions, because apparently that's where my brain has gone here, but, like, I know Wolverine, Hellboy, you know, not necessarily that, you know, specifically good, you know, not completely down the line good complexity. Is useful.
Sure. I think the fact that we start talking about, we ask questions about Martha Jones and we start answering questions about the Doctor is symptomatic of why, at least I am not going to miss her on the show. She is by far she has really been the least interesting person traveling in the TARDIS for about a year now. And, I mean, it was super refreshing to have Captain Jack again. It was, I was happy to continue traveling with the Doctor. But equally so, I'm, you know what? I'll phrase it differently. I'm really happy that she now has an opportunity to reconnect with her family. Isn't that lovely?
I'm going to say, I think the thing I'm happy with is the writers now have to accomplish a fucking challenge, because what they tried to do was just carry on doing more romantic stuff. And I was sick of fucking romantic stuff by this point in 2007 and am now again. And I'm looking forward to a companion that doesn't have to do any of that.
Yeah. You're going to think Donna Noble is a breath of fresh air, my friend.
Great. Cut. This episode is done. Chaps, can one follow you on Twitter? Drew, do you have an account? Would you like people to follow you online?
I certainly would. Every time I tweet on Twitter, I think, this is the tweet that's going to break my name and make me famous and make me the heir to Justin Bieber and Stephen Fry, and then me, my name and lights, on the Twitter front page. Never happens. I have 33 followers, 29 of whom I know.
Oh.
Who live in Oxford.
But you're a genius. Your tweets are awesome. Yes, people, please do yourselves a favor and follow Drew. What is your handle again?
It's Drew Back When.
I am fan of Drew Back When. Nick, do you want people to follow you online, perchance?
I really do. And talk to me about Doctor Who, because it'll distract me from my life.
Mr. New Job.
It's true. I need distractions. You can follow me at Nicolele.
N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E. How about you, Leon?
Yeah, please feel free to high-five me online. I will high-five you right back. Find me on Twitter. I am at Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD saying how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD.
Thank you so much for listening. You've been a real treat. Please continue to send us your thoughts. Catch us in the next one. The next New Who episode is going to be
Voyage of the Damned.
The next classic is going to be
The Mind Robber.
And the next Audio Who is going to be The Cannibalists. Yum. Ugh. So stay tuned for that. Until then, be rad next to each other. Shut show.
Bye.
Kablamo. Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of who back when. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus who back when. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account, no lie, so give us a follow. You guessed it, that's @WhoBackWhen, all in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your ear balls in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When?